Welcome to another edition of the Green and Gold Then and Now podcast. I am Steve Zottke, and joining me each and every, at least week or every other week, it is...
Polish Pipe Bomb, Jeff Orlowski here.
How you doing, Jeff?
Well, I wish Sunday's game went a little better. A tie sure feels like a loss after that one, doesn't it?
The term kissing your sister has been bandied about a lot, and it's certainly true. This is one of those, I don't know, not a movie, but or maybe a TV show. I guess maybe like The Sopranos. Remember the ending of The Sopranos, in which really nobody really liked the ending, how it ended with the scene with Tony and the family in the deli.
Ordering onion rings.
And it's just, you know, it goes, you know, quick, it just went to black, or the Seinfeld finale, which a lot of people really didn't like. I kind of understand where they were trying to go to in that one, and I understand what was it, David Chase, I think it was, that in the for that did the Sopranos, what he was trying to do with the ending, kind of leaving it to your imagination what happened. But this one was just frustrating for like both Packer and Viking fans, because well, it should have been the Packers game, obviously, with the interception, and you're thinking the game is over, and then, oh, wait a second.
Yep.
And it's like, oh, no, you got to be kidding. And then you're thinking, oh, no, Clay Matthews again.
Yeah.
2 weeks in a row. But then when you see the replay, you're thinking, what was wrong with that?
Right.
You're thinking, wait a second. Everybody's talking about the weight rule, and that's falling. You can't put your pressure. You can't drive the guy in. And it's basically the Rodgers rule now, but where you can't drive the guy in, the quarterback, into the ground, and his left hand, he's supporting himself and rolling off, because it's pretty much now you tackle the guy, and as you're falling down, you kind of roll off of him to the side, either side. You don't stay with the quarterback now. You got to kind of roll off. Now, where this is going to be interesting is when you have somebody like Cam Newton. Now, granted, Cam Newton has been just getting the crap kicked out of him over the last few years. And, yes, he should have gotten some calls. I'm pretty much maybe not 100% in his corner on that, but I'm pretty much 85% of a guy. Just because he's a big guy, you shouldn't be able to abuse him like they have been. But then again, how the heck are you going to tackle 6'5" Cam Newton, who goes about 270?
Right.
In that manner. It's one thing with Rodgers or Cousins or some of these, you know, pretty much every, even Stafford. Stafford's a big boy. You know, how the heck, I mean, there's going to be situations where these guys are going to get away, and you wonder if the coaches are just going to say, if you're going to get a penalty, make sure it's worth it.
Well, yeah, I can see that. And you had the play where Mike Daniels gets to Kirk Cousins, totally lets up, and Kirk gets away from him and throws a pass. So, you know, the NFL, they finally fixed the catch rule, and now they have this rule, which is just a complete unmitigated disaster.
In a way, it's almost worse, because you're getting more situations, I think, where it's happened. And it's already... Well, okay, the catch rule impacted that one Cowboy game a couple of years ago, but this has already impacted a Packer game. Why is everything impacting Packer games? Yeah, the stupid ref with a catch. The fail Mary.
Yeah.
And of course, it screwed the Packers, and he got the makeup was the Dez Bryant. No catch, I guess. But then you have this thing last week. It's like, it's so frustrating. And, you know, it brought back memories. If you remember, you know, this is one of these things where you go, oh, it was like 5, 6, 7 years ago. But then you hear, oh, it was actually 15 years ago. But let me know if you remember the in the grasp rule.
Oh, yeah.
When they were trying to protect the quarterback, and pretty much it was almost like a two-handed tag, where you just grabbed onto the guy And it really, you know what, the quarterbacks that affected were of course the scramblers, you know, and there's guys that have made their living scrambling. And, you know, if you remember, if you go way back, you know, you think of guys like Fran Tarkington and these guys that used to run around, Doug Flutie running around, and, you know, it's just so frustrating when you're on the other side of the ball. But is this a situation where you wonder when that happened, they had that in the grasp, bro. I want to say for, I think, the first three games, and then there was an adjustment. And it's like the NFL got religion or got whatever you want to say, and they finally said, hey, this is stupid. Let's correct this a little bit. Let's tweak it. But now we hear they're doubling down on this.
Yeah, of course they are.
And the NFL is in a situation where you're like, wow, they're really screwing up this. They're doing as much as they can to screw up this game, aren't they?
Yeah, it sounds like it. You know, every rule change that they've had that they put under the big wet blanket called player safety, and, you know, it doesn't work. And it's not just football. You know, baseball with the Buster Posey rule, you know, you take out the collisions at the plate.
I can see that.
Oh, come on.
You know,
a little bit. That's the most exciting play in baseball.
But,
you know.
I put it on my Facebook site. It was so ridiculous. I think it was 72. I forget who it was. I think Joe Rudy was the second baseman on the A's, I think. That got taken out by somebody. It wasn't a play. It wasn't baseball, Jeff. It was an assault. It was the cops should have been called. I mean, you thought, you know, they were getting crap for that game where the cops are called to that pickup basketball game.
Oh, yeah.
Well, this is a situation where this was ridiculous.
I mean, that clip that you had on there. And yes, that was brutal too, but that brings, you know, the Chase Utley rule, which is bogus too, because breaking up a double play is very important in baseball. Plays at the plate are the most exciting plays of the game. They ruin those. Now, I do agree with what you said. I'm tired of the Packers being the guinea pigs, and something horrible has to happen to Green Bay before they switch the rules. The Fail Mary cost us a home playoff game that season, and I think that this, the Clay Matthews hit, might end up costing us a home playoff game again. If the Packers would have started out 2-0 like they should have had this stupid penalty not been called, and, you know, and this, I'm not just putting it on the penalty alone because the Packers choked in that fourth quarter huge, but if the Packers would have won this game like they should have, they're 2-0 in for the season and 2-0 in the division, which is huge. You beat last season's division champion, and you beat, until the last 20 years, you beat your oldest rival, the Chicago Bears.
Mm-hmm.
So you would have beat both of your top two rivals in the first 2 weeks of the season. You are flying high in the driver's seat, 2-0. Now they're 1-0-1. They don't have the victory over Minnesota, and it could end up biting them in the butt come the end of the season again.
The only thing that helps is that if it's a tie against a divisional, it just makes that next game in Minnesota that much more important. However, if it's out of conference or out of division, I think it hurts you a little more. That tie is more like a loss. If it's within the division, and it looks like it's going to be Minnesota and Green Bay battling for the title, I think it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, but it hurts because it was at Lambeau.
Well, it hurts because, yes, and it makes that road game that much more important.
Exactly.
It basically is taking out a game out of the division. That game doesn't count.
Right.
It just was a waste of time, you know, but it's actually kind of better, though, that it's against Minnesota than, let's say, it would have been later in the season at Arizona or somebody else.
Yeah, or against Miami,
somebody
not even in the same conference.
Right.
You know, yeah, but the fact that it was at home.
I'm trying to put a little bit of shine on that turd. Just a little, you know, just you know, but there's not much you can do. That's the best you can really do with that situation.
I know.
Because it hurts the Vikings, too. You know, I mean, imagine if Fuller catches that interception.
Well, yeah.
The Bears are 2-0.
Yeah.
After beating the Seahawks.
You know, it helps the Vikings because, A, they should have lost. B, they escaped with a tie on the road. So, like you said, it puts much more importance on the game in Minnesota, but that's in Minnesota.
Right.
So the Packers are going to go in there at a very distinct disadvantage to begin with.
It'll be interesting to see. The Packers have always had a good presence in Minneapolis on the road, just like they are with Brewers and Twins games. You know, with the Twins, it seemed like it was about 25% Brewer fans. And with the Vikings, especially in the Metrodome because it was so big, it would be sometimes, you know, 20%, especially if it was a down year for the Vikings, though. It could get up there. I remember a couple of games where it seemed like it was almost half and half.
Mm-hmm.
But this year is interesting because I don't think we've ever heard as many Viking fans at Lambeau Field, did we?
No, they showed up.
A little bit of a concern.
Yeah, they showed up. But that brings the whole thing, you know.
Well, that's the danger of putting in as many seats as they have. And I think you're going to see Lambeau Field and a couple other of these. I don't think you're going to be seeing these big, huge palaces anymore. And everybody's, you know what they're doing? They're downsizing. Take a look at what they're doing in Los Angeles.
Well, they're downsizing total seats,
mm-hmm.
but increasing the boxes because
yes.
you don't have to share the revenue that you get from the luxury boxes,
yep.
where you do have to share with the visiting team the revenue you get from the regular seats. But as far as completely downsizing, look at Dallas. 1,000 people that place holds?
And it's become an issue. We saw it last year at a couple of games, especially if you play a team that travels well on the road. Your teams like Pittsburgh, Green Bay, have always had a strong road presence.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when, in the late 90s, the Packer fans would take over the games in Tampa Bay, Arizona, when they would go down to
Atlanta.
They would take, I mean, it was because it was a destination city. I mean, hey, let's go see. Hey, you know, the fans go, oh, let's see, where are the road games? Oh, yeah, we can go, you know, yeah, let's go to Arizona. My aunt lives there, or I have relatives there, or I can schedule a company meeting, whatever it is. You can usually fit in a couple of reasons and justify that travel. I mean, same thing with, or if it's close enough, your interdivisional games, but also when Indianapolis is on the schedule. It's not too far to take a quick trip down to Indianapolis.
Yeah, I went to Cleveland a handful of years ago to see the Packers, and that was a great time. It was a great time. You know, being
Sparky
on the road.
Always talks about the last, I think it was the last Browns game, wasn't it, in 2000, whenever that was? 2002, maybe, I think it was, when I think the Packers were either the last or the penultimate home game for the Browns before they moved to Baltimore.
Okay.
And there were a lot of Packer fans there, and it was Sparky Owls tells a great story about how weird it was. And it was a really, if you look in, like, if you go to SI Vault online and a couple other, there's some stories in there. Really, really interesting how, and I think they did a 30 for 30 on it too when Cleveland left.
Yeah.
And how just, that was so unfair. It was unfair to Cleveland. But I understand, I can understand why Modell did it. You know, you know what? He was broke. He kind of had to. But anyways, we're getting away from
the
Packers.
Well, he won a championship in Baltimore.
And they did, yeah. But it was interesting how people didn't realize how broke Art Modell was.
But I think
he had to move.
I think it's funny that we sit there and, you know, we're talking about it. We wear the Packers travel, you know, the fans traveling mm-hmm. with the team as a badge of honor. But then when the Cubs fans take over Miller Park, that's
right.
like a god-awful insult, and all Cubs fans are awful people. So, you know, it's a complete double standard.
Well, and it's interesting. People always go, well, they're in a playoffs chase now. If you look at Brewer attendance online, they're, I think up until a few years ago in that, their biggest year for attendance was 83. Not 82 when they went to World Series. It was the year after. And if you look at sports franchises, usually after that championship year, usually that's when they have the biggest uptick in attendance.
Yeah.
It's always, it takes a year. And it's the same thing with All-Star voting, too. People always bitch and moan about, oh, you should be on the All-Star. It's usually that next year everybody gets voted on the All-Star game.
Yeah. Yeah. It's,
especially in football, we see that a lot.
Yeah. Everybody's a year late, and yep. But they catch on.
So I heard a couple of interesting stats from the game.
Okay.
One of them was, I think it was 30% of the Packers, or I'm sorry, the Vikings offensive plays were held after the interception that was called off.
Mm-hmm.
That I thought was very interesting. And the other one I heard was before Kevin King got hurt, that they had held Diggs to like 3 passes, 6 yards,
yeah,
something to that. And then our buddy Devon House.
Oh, yeah. His hover round ran out of batteries. He could, that old guy could not keep up. And, you know, everybody's asking the question why Jackson or Alexander or one of those guys wasn't covering him. And it's hard not to. You know, right. The thing that drove me crazy was the excuses. You know, the Packers only had the ball once in overtime. And, oh, well, you know, why couldn't the Packers' defense get off the field? Oh, well, they were gassed. Well, the Packers held the ball, I want to say, in the fourth quarter for the entire fourth quarter with the exception of, like, 2 minutes. So the defense played, like, 2 minutes in the fourth quarter because they had that huge, like, 75-yard touchdown to Diggs, and then they had another real quick, like, scoring drive as well. So there's no way in hell those guys were gassed.
Well, what did you think of McCarthy's play calling on the last drive?
Obviously, being a complete Mike McCarthy hater, I hated it. You know, you should have ran the ball. You should have made them burn their timeouts. I totally understand the catch 22.
Right.
If he runs it and he makes the Vikings burn the timeouts and the Vikings come back and win, well, he took his foot off the gas. Where he tried to throw it, left them all the time in the world and their timeouts. You know, why didn't you
Does
run it?
Does he have that killer instinct that, screw it, we're not going to go for a field goal? He didn't watch the Badger game, but that was the scuttlebutt. Everybody watching it was like, didn't you learn anything from yesterday? Don't play for the field goal. Go for the touchdown.
Oh,
anything can happen in a field goal.
Absolutely.
Even, you know, Mason Crosby is one of the best in the business. I don't care. Go for it. It's a hell of a lot easier to go for that touchdown.
You got it.
I know. You know, and yes, Vikings have a very talented defense. You have Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, hello. I know. And we carved them up in the first half. So, and Jimmy Graham had a big second half in that game. You know, after playing basically just god-awful football in that Bears game, Jimmy Graham showed up and put up some nice numbers. So, you know, it's hard to fathom that you're rolling Crosby out there for, what, 6 kicks? 6 field goals in that game. And obviously it came back to bit him. It just, that game was so frustrating to watch. And, you know, I went from just being happy, oh, yeah, you know, we got this one. We're going to win.
Yeah.
And then the wheels came off. It felt like Seattle again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it felt like the NFC Championship game, just with a whole lot less at stake. But that's kind of what it was. You know, but, you know, it was a bunch of bad calls. It wasn't just the Clay one. You had Devontae Adams dropping. He dropped 2 or 3 balls, and he got an offensive pass interference call. You had the ghost holding by Lane Taylor. You had the Vikings that sat there and had pass interference on Jimmy Graham on a long ball that he would have caught right up against the sidelines that was never called. So, you know, it was like Seattle. It was one thing after another, just layer and layer and layer of this crap sandwich getting built right before your eyes. And honestly, with all that stuff still going wrong, the Packers were kind of lucky to walk out with a tie. And thank God that the Vikings didn't have a kicker, man.
Oh, I know.
Because if that game would have turned into a loss instead of a tie, which I still call a loss.
Well, we'll be talking about that. You know, with you're listening to the Green and Gold podcast Then and Now. I'm Steve Zottke along with Jeff Orlowski. And one of the things that we not only talk about the games, the current game, but we also try and bring in a parallel or the history of the Packers being in their 100th year and whatnot. But before we go into a similar game that it was just as frustrating for me as a kid, let's talk about the two things I wanted to bring up. With the Packers secondary, though, looks like when healthy, we got something going there, don't we?
We do. Jackson looks good. Alexander looks good. Tremont Williams had some decent plays. Bryce had an awesome game against the Bears. Did not carry that over week against the Vikings. Obviously, he went up against, in my opinion, better wide receiving talent. And then, House was just god-awful. But it looks like both top two draft picks in Alexander and Jackson are going to be the real deal. Question comes down, can Kevin King stay healthy? That's been a China doll.
Yep.
So if he can stay healthy, I think our secondary is in good shape. Ha, ha,
He's playing for a contract. It'll be interesting to see, but I've said this before. I don't know if I said this in the last podcast or that, but it's a new defense. Got to give him two games to kind of start to settle in. And it seems like they're settling in already, but it'll be interesting to see. I don't think we're going to be really seeing it's going to look. I think the defense is going to look a heck of a lot better, and it should in November and December when it counts the most. So it'll be interesting to see. I like where they're at right now. I wasn't expecting as much, even though we had kind of had the mini collapse there at the end of the game. I was looking at that game, how it was, it's like, wow, this ain't too bad here. We got a defense. Kirk Cousins, you're thinking, and that the Vikings defense or offense is nothing to sneeze at. They have some talented, and yeah. Diggs, I think, is right up there.
Well, Diggs, he's not top Thielen, five, but he's definitely.
And Thielen never drops anything.
No.
He does not drop. And, for a guy. It's funny, Packer fans are always, I'm always teasing them about the white wide receivers. But they were thinking that way, with, what's his name?
Nelson, Kumaro, pick one.
No, but from last year, who was on the Browns?
Aberderis.
No, after.
Oh, Janus.
Janus. They're hoping that he's going to be the next
Great White Hope.
Great White Hope. Let's take a break and we'll be right back. And we are back on the Green and Gold Then and Now podcast, brought to you by
Baby Giggles Nursery.
Oh, one of the best one of the best daycare places you can go to.
Oh, it's amazing. It's amazing.
But it's for adults. It's for adults who have diaper fetishes and that. There's no judgment. And so if you go in there, you'll get swaddled and taken care of at Baby Giggles. So it's...
And Tim Allen's Optimistic Club.
Yeah, yeah. You know what? I was in St. Louis a couple weeks ago, and we drove by the Optimist Club.
You throw eggs at the windows?
No. I smiled and said, that's nice.
Oh, cute.
So Washington Redskins.
Yeah.
Lots of people forget. There's lots of memories with the Washington Redskins and the Packers, and probably the most memorable for me personally, of course, is that 1983 Monday Night Football game. Which I don't care. I still say, maybe the Marino, or not the Vinny Testaverde comeback, Jets Dolphins one.
Mm-hmm.
That's good. But 1983, Joe Theismann, Lynn Dickey. You can beat our Packers, but you can't lick our Dickey. 48-47 Packer win, sealed by a missed field goal by the last straight on kicker in the NFL, Mark Moseley.
Nice.
You were what, two at that time? Probably?
What year was it? 83?
83.
I was six.
6 years old. You weren't up that that late, were you?
Nope. I don't remember that one. My great memory of the Redskins was, I want to say, 86. I believe they knocked the Bears out of the playoffs.
Oh, yes. That was the shutout, I think, right?
Yeah. I was watching that game with all my family. They were all Bears fans, and I was, what, 8 or 9?
And you had jumped ship by then.
Oh, yeah. I was a Packer fan by then and won some money in that game.
You were winning money at 8 years old.
Yeah, I took 25 off my godfather, and I think 20 off my dad.
That's like me learning to play poker during Super Bowl 12, I think, the first or second Steelers-Cowboys.
You were, Super what, Bowl. 43 at the time?
No, I was 10. I think about 10 years old.
Yeah.
It's not that funny. You're not that funny. Now, going back, I don't remember this game, but also another memorable game is the 1972 divisional playoffs. People forget about the 1972 Packers, who were 10-4 under Dan Devine.
Okay.
And they made it to the playoffs behind the running of MacArthur Lane and John Brockington. Unfortunately, they had a quarterback named Scott Hunter. Now, I have a buddy of mine, he always brings up the Super Bowl stats of the game, how it used to be, like the Miami Dolphins, in which I think the same Super Bowl from that year, as I think it would be Super Bowl 7. Bob Greasy, I think, threw like 9, 8, 10 times in that whole game.
Wow.
Anyways, in the divisional playoffs, we got Dan Devine going to RFK Stadium, George Allen, and all he did was put 8 guys in the box, doubled up, and they just smothered John Brockington, MacArthur Lane, and because Scott Hunter could not throw, he couldn't hit a barn from 3 feet away.
Yeah,
he was an awful, awful quarterback. So bad, they actually drafted, I think they had drafted Jerry Tagge from Nebraska to take over, and he was just as bad. That's the genesis of the John Hadle trade made 2 years later.
Okay.
Because the Packers were looking for a quarterback, and they were desperate. And then Devine, who's already leaving for Notre Dame, does the trade with the Rams for John Hadle. And you remember that, how that went?
I do not.
You know Lawrence Welk?
Yeah.
Okay. How, you know what he used to say? He used to start off songs, a 1, a 2, a 3, a 1, 2. That's what the Packers gave up for John Hadle.
Okay. Hmm. That's one hell of a...
You think the Bears gave up a lot? At least he can play. John Hadle was 34 years old and bald.
And no, I think the Bears didn't give up all that much for Khalil Mack, and I wish the Packers would have made that. But it's only been 2 weeks, and what has Khalil Mack done besides dominate?
And this is the throwback. The game last Sunday with the Vikings brought me back to 1980, October 12th, 1980, in fact. Packers against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. This was the Bay of Pigs, if there ever had been one. Lynn Dickey against Doug Williams. And this is before Doug Williams went to the Redskins. This wasn't...
And won the
Super Bowl. Yeah.
Okay.
This was... Well, everybody sucked with the Buccaneers back then. Steve Young couldn't do anything with them. Yes, 14-14 tie. What's interesting is Doug Williams threw for 103 yards.
Mm-hmm.
Lynn Dickey threw for 418 yards.
And they only put up 10 points?
They put up 14
points. Or 14 points?
What did they do? Well, they tried, guess how many field goals?
Three.
Tom Birney, their kicker, 0-for-3. And these were chip shots. So 3 times they had a chance to win the game. They couldn't. Lynn Dickey would take them up and down the field, passing all over the place. Here comes Tom Birney. With number 11, with the old-style Packer uniforms, with the 11, though, unusually spread apart.
Mm-hmm.
Looked even more stupid on him. And, yeah, there he goes. Straight-on kicker, too, if I recall.
Wow.
Yeah, doink off the goalpost one side, doink off the goalpost the other side.
Wow.
Yeah, it was frustrating. That's the Packers I remember as a child.
What frustrates me is the fact that you just recited all that and you don't have one note in front of you from memory. How is your memory that you're like a freaking encyclopedia and I can't remember what I had for breakfast?
Gotta lay off the drugs, man.
Yeah, says who?
This has been another episode of the Green and Gold. Then and Now podcast. Make sure you tell a friend. Make sure to subscribe. And we will be back next week. Jeff, any final things? Any final thoughts?
Well, I'll tell you this. The Packers better not tie the freaking Redskins.
I got another stat for you. 1973, the Packers were 4-8-2.
Okay, so if this game ends up in a tie, you can send all your hate mail to Steve Zaki.
I think twice in their – I think in 1970 they tied twice. I want to say they were like 5-7-2 in 71.
Well, they better pick up a victory and a convincing one at that. Hopefully the return of Aaron Jones sparks this running game.
Jamal Williams has not done anything to solidify that starting spot.
No, but I don't think he's played bad.
The offensive line isn't really, it's not the monsters of the Midway you're looking at there.
You know, I've actually was sort of impressed with Jamal Williams. So, you know, Aaron Jones gives you the home run threat where Jamal Williams doesn't. You know, but hopefully as a combo, they're able to rush for 120 plus. That, you know, obviously take away a lot of the pressure off of Aaron Rodgers and that still injured knee. So hopefully we get the running game going. Hopefully we can actually close out this freaking game, unlike the one that we choked away with Minnesota.
Bring out the gimp.
Hello.